From team-focused farm system breakdowns, prospect rankings, and interviews with some of the brightest up-and-comers in the game, Locked On MLB Prospects is the best way to stay plugged in on the future of your favorite team. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Today's Tuesday, July 27th, 2021. And again, still a little backed up on episodes here, but had the chance to sit down over Zoom and talk to Alex Carr from The Good Fight. He, of course, has been on the podcast before. And similar to the episode with Anthony DeBundo, if you had a chance to listen to that, Alex Carr, he's a glass half full kind of guy, self-proclaimed, you know, looking at things positively. And I could use some more positivity when it comes to this Phillies team. I've come to the realization that this team will be buyers at the trade deadline. I did not think that would be the case as of just a few short weeks ago, but this team will be a buyer at the trade deadline. As I'm recording this here on Tuesday night, just before first pitch of this game, the Phillies tried to make a move today for Tyler Anderson from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Looks like that may have fallen through. Still a chance it happens, but we are still not sure on the status of that deal. But we obviously recorded that before that was even rumored or anything else, but we did it ahead of the trade deadline and just with the outlook of this team being right there in contention in the National League East. As we sit here right now, Phillies 3.5 back of the New York Mets, certainly still in it, could improve by the end of the week. So I'll stop talking, let you take a listen to my conversation with Alex Carr from The Good Fight.
Joining us on today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast, he has been on the podcast before. You know him from Twitter. You know him from The Good Fight. You know him from all over the place if you follow this Phillies team. It is Alex Carr. Alex, how you doing today?
Greetings, sir. Glad to be here. Glad to be hopping on from the Outer Banks. I'm taking a vacation during trade deadline week. The worst idea that ever could have been. Ever could have been dreamt, but I am here doing the thing. But I'm just glad to be here. Glad to be talking to baseball.
Yeah. I'm just happy we got you. You know, you said you're in the Airbnb. We got you with some cell reception here. Happy to, to join on via Zoom. I promise I'll keep you updated here. You know, like the Phillies deal for Craig Kimbrel or Chris Bryant or something crazy while we're recording here. I'm going to have to let you know. So that would be kind of nuts, but well, you know, I'm happy we were able to get you on. Had so much fun the last time. And as I was telling you before we started recording here, like here's where I'm at with this Phillies team. So we're, 98 games into the season now. We're coming up on the final week in July. They're 49-49. The debates are not going anywhere. Are they buyers or sellers? I, for the longest time, was like, this team is not good enough to be buying. And then the National League East actually managed to get tighter than it already was. They're still sitting here as we record this on Sunday night, July 25th. They sit four games back of the New York Mets. If they were in any other division in baseball, they'd be nowhere close to the hunt as we talk right here. But the NL East has turned into the National League Least, which is similar to what, you know, a similar situation the Eagles have had in previous seasons, where it's not so much about what they're doing, but it's about what the other teams around them are not doing. So I'll kind of just get it right out of the way because it's what everyone's debating right now. We have four more games now until the trade deadline as the Phillies just draw a split with the Braves at home with the Nationals as big of, I mean, another huge series. Every single game is huge at this point. I'm not going to ask you whether you think they're going to be buyers or sellers, because at least in my opinion, they've made it pretty clear that they're going to buy. It's why you go get Dave Dombrowski. It's why he makes the comments of like, yeah, we're going to go add to this team. It's maybe just a matter of how aggressive they are at this trade deadline or what they can physically sell off to get done. But I'll ask it point blank, like how aggressive should they be? Not will they be? And how much are you buying into? I mean, it's more than a second half surge at this point. It's like a final third surge between the months of August and September. Obviously, we've heard a lot about the schedule being easier, but what have you seen overall from this team? What's your outlook on the rest of the season in terms of making a push to win this division?
So my outlook for pretty much any team at the trade deadline, I mean, especially if you're a competitive team, I always think that you have to be thinking forward, unless you are, you know, the Dodgers, or maybe, I mean, I don't even at this point think I can say the Padres. But like, and I'm not ready to say the Giants either. Like, unless you're the Dodgers, unless you are the Los Angeles Dodgers, I don't think you can sit here and say, okay, well, we're just going to go out and make a 1-year push, acquire a bunch of rentals, you know, give up our massive depth and swath of prospects for guys that make our team more complete or fill one of our injury zones or whatever. I don't think you can say that unless you're that kind of team. So when you're the Phillies, when you're even the Mets, the Braves, whatever, I think if the right deals present themselves that help you not only this year, but subsequent years, I think those are the ones that you should always be looking for. I mean, if the price matches what you're willing to pay, why wouldn't you pull the trigger if it makes your team better? That being said, I think that this team, it's less about my confidence in them and more about my lack of confidence in every other team in this division. I mean, look, we all thought, I thought personally, I remember when we had our first chat before the season began, you know, I thought the Mets were going to win this division. I thought it was not going to be particularly close. I still thought the Phillies would be in the hunt. I thought that they would play second, maybe, you know, hang around for a wild card spot. I don't know. But the Mets are leading the division, but they have not done so in a very commanding way. I mean, not only can they not stay healthy, but also that team just was not constructed as, I guess, as well as we thought it was. You know, Francisco Lindor, even though he is hurt right now, struggled pretty mightily. James McCann struggled pretty mightily. It turns out all of the additions that they made didn't make as much of a splash as they wanted them to. I mean, even Taijuan Walker, who was fabulous in the first half, has really struggled here in the second half. So, I mean, it's an open season, right? I mean, it is completely open to whichever team has the best trade deadline. And I use best trade deadline in quotes because who can really say what that means, but, you know, has the most competitive trade deadline. And whoever, you know, stays the most consistent throughout the rest of the year. And look, I'm not saying that the Phillies are going to be that team, but they can add players to this roster that can make them that team. And while, yes, there are, you know, quite a few holes that you can point at and say, they need better this, they need better that. Ultimately, there's only so much they can do. But the moves that they do make can have a severe ripple effect throughout the entirety of the roster. It doesn't just have to mean that because you've acquired a true closer, you know, it automatically, you know, makes your bullpen completely fixed and, you know, you wave the magic wand and everything's done. But, you know, it does mean that you can kind of start to assign bullpen roles. I mean, let's say you acquired Craig Kimbrel, then Ranger Suarez bumps into a long relief role, a fireman role, if you will. I mean, which would be so supremely valuable from him. You know, Archie Bradley, Jose Alvarado, Hector Neris, they slot into these setup or maybe, you know, stopper roles that can be, you know, switched around. But that automatically makes your bullpen just so much stronger and a little bit more reliable. And that also takes some pressure off your starting staff. I mean, it's a ripple effect, right? So I'm not saying that they should go out and acquire all of these players on expiring deals and, you know, try to make the push for the National League East, like that's going to, you know, somehow magically bring them to the World Series. It's not. But they should be thinking forward and they should be thinking, you know, about deals that can help them for more than just this year to compete for the division in subsequent seasons as well.
Well, that's kind of how I was thinking, especially about a month ago. So a month ago, I'm looking and saying this team, I mean, how many games were they out for? That's four games right now. At one point they were, I mean, it was the 5.5, 6.5. I think it even reached in the 7 or 8 range. It was multiple teams, third or fourth place.
It was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. And I'm sitting there saying, look, if some team wants to take the remainder of Andrew McCutchen's contract, or if someone wants to take Didi Gregorius off the Phillies' hands, who hasn't even been all that good, if someone wants, even if someone, I would have listened to at that point, someone saying, hey, we will give you a haul for, say, Zach Wheeler, and that would make you better next year. I mean, I'm going to be cautious with that, but I would have opened the door to it because I'm saying this team isn't going to win this year. I don't think that necessarily means tearing the entire thing down and building it back up from scratch, which, of course, I think most people would agree, is a more sustainable way to build a team, build a contender in the long term. Okay, for a variety of reasons, they didn't do that. They kind of expedited that process. They didn't do it well. And you're in a situation where you're kind of just fast forwarding that, buying talent, whether it's Harper, trading for Real Muto, et cetera. Okay, so you're already here where you are. We're in the year 2021. And I'm saying to myself, again, if they were in any other team in baseball, like you said, it's not so much about what the Phillies are doing, but it's about what every other team around them is doing. You have Francisco Lindor, who's now on the IL, but was disappointing as it was. Jacob DeGrom battling injuries for much of this season. You have Taijuan Walker now struggling since he was named to the All-Star team. And James McCann also is another guy you mentioned. And suddenly all these additions of like, wow, the Mets are the perennial team to beat here in the National League East. And we thought the Braves were in game seven with the Dodgers last year. And all these things that you expect, and they're down Acuna also, all these things where you would have expected other teams to just be at a different level than the Phillies are. And it's like, nah, the Phillies are still hanging in there and they still feel like a 500 team to me. And that's literally what they, I think they lead baseball in times being 500. I forget what number of times it was today.
Probably.
It's like a dozen.
I think it's 13. Yeah.
I think it's something around that. Like they just tread water and they'll go a few games up, a few games back, and they just feel like a 500 team. So I ask you this. Okay, so if they're a 500 team right now and on a 98 game sample size they are, how much better are they going to get based upon what they get at the trade deadline? Or are we kind of just crossing our fingers and saying, like today against the Braves, Aaron Nola pitches arguably his best game of the entire season. I know he had a complete game in there, but he goes 8 2/3 today and his final battery allows a home run in a huge spot against the Braves where there have been a number of big spots for Nola this season. He has not come up big. There have been a number of consistency issues with Aaron Nola, stringing a few good starts in a row. Doesn't seem like he has the same zip on his pitches, the same bite on his curveball as he has had in previous seasons. Whatever you want to chalk that up to, is this Phillies team kind of just relying on hope that a guy like that turns it around in 2 months? Are we relying on, hey, if they got Kimbrel, okay, the bullpen takes stress off this rotation? Do they need to just flat out go get another starter? Because right now we have, you know, the Phillies rather have Zach Eflin on the injured list. Doesn't seem like it'll be a lengthy injured list stay, but nevertheless, you have big starts this week. You got Spencer Howard and Matt Moore, even Vince Velasquez still starting games for you. Do they need to cover up that hole? Like, what is the biggest hole they need to cover? Is it enough to fix this over the next 2 months? And if they get into the playoffs, is this a situation where you say, okay, that was great, they got in the playoffs, they ended the longest playoff drought in the National League? Or does it actually lead to something more? Like, what are they thinking in terms of the future? Or are they just thinking right now? And if they were to, let's say, lose 3 or 4 of the Nationals and they fall further back and the Mets have an unbelievable series this week, is there any scenario where they would less cautiously buy and start playing for next year? Kind of the idea I had. Like, so much still seems in limbo here and a lot of unanswered questions. I just don't know how fixable it is. And I would like your take on that.
Definitely. So, look, I think that the reason that we feel so, and I mean we as, you know, the Philadelphia collective, that we feel so down on this Phillies team right now is because they struggle to do so many things fundamentally that really, you know, it strikes a chord with the fan base. You know, it's the defense, it's the runner, you know, getting the runner home when, you know, you just have to put the ball in play. I mean, that brutal. Yeah,
while we've been recording, the Phillies have left 8 more runners on base, just to let you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, what it comes down to is you put Didi Gregorius, one of your biggest offseason acquisitions, up to the plate against Drew Smyly, bases loaded, no out scenario, and somehow he screws it up. I mean, that is what is making everyone so, you know, it's what's bogging everyone down, right? Like, everybody is so disappointed.
It's not that they're losing, it's the way that they're losing and the way they
tease. And that's why it feels so painful, because the fundamentals are lacking on this team, right? And that's kind of by design, unfortunately. You know, the Phillies seem to always neglect some of the more important fundamental aspects when it comes to team building. And by that, I mean, you know, strengthening every position every part of your team equally. So, you know, you balance offense with defense, with bullpen, with rotation, with et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, they sometimes leave one of those things out, maybe two of those things out. But then, you know, it also just comes down to they always have guys that seem to be hacking for the fences, not just guys who want to put the ball in play and see what happens. So maybe it's time to switch that up a little bit. But ultimately, what I'm trying to say here is, if you made this team a like just an averagely fundamental, because they're 29th in defensive run saved this year. Like let's just call it like it is. The defense sucks. But if you turned all of the, just like, I know it's painful, but rehash some of those really painful losses, right? Those fundamentally painful, the Rhys Hoskins miffed plays at first base, the bullpen struggles because of a misplayed ball on the infield, a mistracked fly ball by, you know, somebody like Brad Miller in the outfield, Andrew McCutchen in the outfield, just like rehash all of these. And then all of a sudden, if you make this a fundamentally average team, half of those losses that probably equate out to like maybe 10, 12, those would be wins. And I mean, I'm not trying to tell you, you know, because that's not how baseball works, right? What happened happened. We chalked it up as a loss, so it's a loss. But what we're looking at with this team isn't necessarily a bad squad, as it is just not a fundamentally sound squad. And I know that sounds kind of, you know, not very good, but there are things that can be changed to make that not so. So, I mean, if you decided to, you know, platoon shortstop with Didi Gregorius and Ronald Torres, Ronald Torres is a much better defender than Didi Gregorius. I mean, you probably have a much better chance at not seeing one of those blowups happen again. You know, Gene Segura is an outstanding defender at second base. Sure, Alec Bohm is not very good at third base, but then you start getting into the conversation, well, what if we acquired, you know, just a bench bat, a right-handed bench bat that can play third base really well, and just defensively substituted Alec Bohm out in the bottom of the ninth of really, really big games, or top of the ninth or what have you, you know, when we have a lead per se. And then you start getting into these conversations of, well, now we're coming down the stretch, you know, what can we really, really do to grind out as many wins as we possibly can? Well, you know, you go out, you acquire a closer, you go out, you acquire some more bullpen guys. I mean, because right now we look at this bullpen, Eniel De Los Santos is still in there. Brandon Kinsler still in there. These are two guys that should not be in the bullpen going further. So, I mean, and I think there's one more that I'm forgetting. I mean, Christopher Sanchez is there, but he's been pretty darn good, except for maybe one poor outing. But, you know, you start adding back Sam Coonrod, maybe, hopefully. Sir Anthony Dominguez made an appearance on TV the other day. I mean, you start, maybe you add Craig Kimbrell, maybe you add Ryan Tepera from the Cubs, maybe you add, you know, just any other reliever. You start kind of shoring up these spots that, and hopefully it won't cost you too much that's, you know, of prospect capital. But then you kind of start feeling a little bit stronger about this team. And I guess my long-winded answer equates to, look, if they can pull it together a little bit more fundamentally, if they can hold those leads when they're supposed to be held, and not make any stupid mistakes or allow any free passes, if the offense can keep firing the way it was before the All-Star break, because, I mean, that was an offense that scored 60 runs in 7 games. I mean, come on now. You can't just kind of put that to the side. This offense is capable of some really, really good things when it's firing. But, you know, that's, again, that's down to some consistency issues, some fundamental issues. So what I'm trying to say is, yes, it's a mixed bag with this team. But I still do think that based on what we've – I mean, the Braves are down their best player. The Mets are down many of their – good players, and a lot of their quote unquote good players have been horrible this year. Not even just Francisco Lindor, like Michael Conforto, James McCann. I mean, truly, Taiwan Walker's struggling. We already mentioned all these guys, but it really does feel like the opportunity is there for the Phillies, and I don't know why they wouldn't seize it.
This episode of Locked On Phillies is brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all of the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brands their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using rockauto.com. Why choose to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rockauto.com is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for more than 20 years. Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you could need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even that new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all of the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in the "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com.
And I, to your point, you know, they're there. Like, mathematically, I've kind of been saying, well, if you drop someone from like another planet, you know, if Jeff Bezos was in space for longer than 11 minutes and he had missed the first 4 months of the baseball season, you said, hey, the Phillies are four games out, you'd say, yeah, they should make a run at it. Maybe I'm just too attached and have seen too much to believe that this will turn around. And I wanted to go back to kind of those fundamental things you were mentioning of like, well, they're just an average fundamental team. Maybe we're looking at a team that's even winning the division. Certainly you replace the players they have with other players. It's not always just, okay, 10 of those losses turns to wins, but you're saying to yourself, it's probably closer than four games. How much of that can be fixed in, I know you were saying, you know, you could go out and get a bench bat that comes in place defensively in for Bohm, or there's instances where you could say, all right, we don't want this guy playing defensively in this role, or you play Ronald Torres more in a platoon, or there are certainly things you can do to kind of tune that up. And actually, for whatever it's worth, I know for the longest time they were like by far 30th in defensive run save. So I guess baby steps. I think they're 29th, as you mentioned.
They
right?
took one baby step, really climbing
here. And the bullpen ERA has been better than
it's been better
the season,
yeah,
than the season began. So is there enough? Like, I guess what I'm trying to ask you: did you see enough in that? I'll call it the optimistic weeks. By the way, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I kind of highlighted this on a podcast a few weeks ago, that every single month the Phillies do this. Like, the first week of each month, I broke down the record. I forget what it is, but they overwhelmingly have won the majority of their games in the first week of months versus like the other 3 weeks of months. So it seems like they're on a recurring month-long cycle where 3 weeks they play mediocre baseball and 1 week they get everyone to buy in again. And they kind of did that for like a week and a half leading up to the All-Star break. They won those three or four at Wrigley, won two or three against the Red Sox. They won two or three against the Padres after.
And then they
won three or four against the Marlins. So it was four series in a row. And you're saying, okay, they look really good. And then they go up and lose two at Yankee Stadium. And yeah, that was a series that featured
in two really painful ways.
Against
a horrible, horrible lineup.
Against like a triple A team. And Didi Gregorius throws a ball away on Tuesday night. And it was a bad Nola start. And you need him to give you more. And then on Wednesday night, you go to extra innings and you manage to get bailed out after Brad Miller can't play a ball on right field. And like, there's a Billy Reese Hoskins is trying to take second base, and whether that came from the dugout or him, regardless, that can't happen in that spot. Like, it's just, they raise it to such an art form that I guess I'm asking you, like, realistically, are they buying with hope? Or are they buying with real reason to believe that they could make a run at this division? And then again, what would winning the division this year mean for the long term?
So that's the question that I really want to get into, is what would winning the division mean for them long term? First of all, if they're willing to go over the luxury tax this year, something that, you know, Philly
they haven't
fans
done.
I feel like most Philly fans, many Philly fans, just like see the luxury tax as like some barrier of competitiveness. And it's like, once we break past there, then we're really competing.
Then we'll be 20 games over 500, you know?
That's just not how it works. But what I do think is really important is that, obviously, if the Phillies front office is willing to go past the luxury tax, which, by the way, if you're going to do that, you better go far, far over the luxury tax. You better
don't just flirt a little over with it.
You got to go all the way over. But again, billionaires should spend their money. But
easy for us to say, yeah.
Look, yeah, well, you know, look at me.
I agree with you. It's a whole separate world. They think differently than we do. It's unfortunate.
Anyway, so if you go over the luxury tax this year, first of all, that's a huge sign of confidence in Dave Dombrowski. That's great. That's awesome. It means that he's got a vision. They believe his vision. Whatever. That doesn't even matter because that's all, you know, just this year. But if you blow past the luxury tax and you win the division this year, then guess what? You enter next year with a payroll that is ready to take on an extra, arguably like $40 million, you know, above what you would normally be ready to take with you into the offseason. So, you know, obviously they're going to have a whole bunch of money falling off. It's about $40 million that falls off. And then you get an extra $40 million from, you know, the luxury tax threshold before you really start paying into super overages. So what I'm trying to say here is if they blow past the luxury tax this year and they win the division, they're going to blow past it again next year. And then the subsequent year, they're going to want to fall off, but that's when a lot of their money will expire too. Gene Segura, Didi Gregorius, I mean, if they get Craig Kimbrel, he expires then, et cetera. So it's a big, big thing for them to win the division this year. It would be huge. Not only does it end the playoff drought, everybody gets optimistic. Everybody's like, all right, we can do it again next year. You know, it's a big swing in morale. More than that, it's a big swing in what you can do in free agency. You all of a sudden will probably feel a little bit more comfortable putting some more, you know, some of those bigger named guys on your roster. You feel like you can sign more depth. I mean, sign more bullpen arms, for goodness sake. Sign more, you know, stronger bench pieces. You know, Brad Miller at $3.5 million this year. A lot of people are, you know, they're not big fans of his defense and he strikes out a lot, sure, but he can hit. And, you know, he's got some really, really clutch moments in the season this year. And a lot of his clutch moments have been robbed from him via incredible defense. Unfortunately, he's been really unlucky. But I mean, that you start seeing more of those guys get added, more rental starter arms. I mean, look at who is a free agent next year. The Phillies could go out and just say, hey, Justin Verlander, you're coming off of a really horrible injury. Dave Dombrowski and you are really close friends. Do you want to come to Philadelphia and teach our two young pitching prospects, Mick Abel and Andrew Painter, who both so happen to be compared to you on a daily basis? Like, the guy is going to get a short-term deal at a high annual average value because he's incredibly risky. But even if he doesn't pitch for the Phillies, that's a risk that you're comfortable taking because, you know, he is Justin Verlander. He's quite possibly the best pitcher of the last, you know, he's up there with Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw. I mean, that is a risk that you then become comfortable taking. So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, it gives you so much more room financially than you already have. And your front office is comfortable spending that money. And that's a big deal. And so this trade deadline has a lot more impact than one might believe on the future of this organization, not only in the players they acquire, but in what those players help them do. And assembling a team that, you know, is hopefully ready to compete for longer than just this 1 year, which, you know, they haven't even competed for the entirety of it. So it'd be nice to compete for an entire year. That'd be great.
So let me ask you this, in terms of just, you know, what this trade deadline means long-term. A, can this team make the playoffs this year without going over the luxury tax? And B, what is more important, what they do at the deadline or getting certain players who are on the current roster to improve, i.e. an Aaron Nola, i.e. knocking more of these runners in? Like, what is more important that it change, what's already here or what they could go get? And again, is it physically possible, in your opinion, or realistically possible, I should say, anything's physically possible, realistically possible that this team makes the playoffs this year or makes that kind of push that this coming off season in the next season that you just mentioned without going over that threshold again, that they have kind of, as I've read it in looking at Dombrowski talk, every time he's asked about it, will you go over the luxury tax? He says, you know, the ownership's committed to winning. And they keep saying, and Joe Girardi on MLB Network this week says this ownership group, we need to prove to them that we're committed to winning. So maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it does seem like there's still maybe a little bit of an internal debate and they're feeding a company line. So A, will they go over it? B, can it be done without going over it? And C, what's more important, what's on the current roster or what they could potentially add?
I think they eventually will go over it. I think that is just, it seems to be the direction that they're heading. And also, I think that they're going a really roundabout way of doing it, but they're trying to kind of when Dave Dombrowski spoke about a retool at the beginning of the season, they're trying to kind of retool without selling anything, which is actually shockingly, it might work. Just because, you know, you look at their last two drafts, they've added some real impact prospects. And look, having a top heavy system isn't always great, but they're also getting a lot of performance out of some guys that they didn't exactly expect to get performance out of. Daniel Brito, who was a top prospect a little while ago, is killing it for them now. Jalen Ortiz is on an absolute tear. Mickey Moniak is on an absolute tear. They're getting production from these guys. So all of a sudden, the system is kind of starting to level out in a way where it's not just, you know, low-level, high-ceiling guys, which is what the Phillies have had for quite a while now. You know, they're starting to add legitimate talent. And I mean, you look at Ethan Wilson and Andrew Painter this year, those guys are, they are pretty legit. So it's interesting. They're rebuilding. I guess what they're trying to do is stagger the farm system now. So that these young guys, Jordan VRs and, you know, Mitch Otenbright, guys like that are going to be, you know, ascending to prospectual status, top prospectual status around the time that the Phillies window is really, you know, I guess coming to a close per se, or like coming to its, you know, its median. But anyway, I do think they'll eventually go over the luxury tax. That just seems to be where they're headed. However, it could be done without going over the luxury tax. There are a whole bunch of, you know, arms out there that can help them that are not making a ton of money this year. I, you know, mentioned Ryan Tepera. I think, you know, you could go out and you can go get Richard Rodriguez. He'd probably cost you a bit more prospect wise, but if you're trying to stay under the luxury tax, there you go. If you want to go get a starting pitcher, you can do that. And worst comes to worst, you can just have the team eat some money, or you could even, something that I'm surprised they're not doing is, you know, shopping guys like Chase Anderson, shopping guys like Vince Velasquez, shopping guys like Odubel Herrera, trying to get these deadweight contracts kind of off of their payroll by taking on other, not deadweight contracts, but other contracts of equal value. So that way they can get rid of that luxury tax salary, taking on another team's luxury tax salary. And then the other team just releases, you know, the Chase Anderson or the Vince Velasquez or the Odubel Herrera, so that the Phillies don't have to do it and eat the luxury tax number. I'm surprised that has not happened yet. I really thought that we would see a little bit more of that from them, which is, again, something that just makes me think that they are going to go over. But it could be done without doing so. It would be a little bit more complicated. And would probably cost you a little bit more prospect wise, but it depends on which way they want to go. And I think that either way you'd end up okay. But I think you'd definitely prefer going over the, especially if you're trying to build a sustainable winner, you'd want to go over the luxury tax this time around, because you don't want to dish out the prospects that it will cost you to have the other team eat some money.
So then my other question is, what is more important, what they could potentially add or what's on the current roster?
Look, I think that you definitely need more impact from guys like Alcone. You definitely need more impact from guys like Didi Gregorius. I mean, Didi Gregorius has been god awful. You need more of an ace showing from, you know, the guy that coming into the season was your ace, Aaron Nola. You need more consistent showing from Zach Eflin. I think what's more important is that they get more production from the guys that are currently on their roster. That is for certain. But I don't think that is, if this makes any sense, I don't think that that's mutually exclusive, right? Both can be true while either being equally as important, right? Like going out and acquiring a guy like John Gray from the Colorado Rockies, right? That's a guy that everyone expects to take a step forward into kind of the like tier two of pitching, right? Being a good three or four, maybe the ceiling of a bad two. But that's like, you know, when you go out and acquire a guy like that, you expect that your team has a strategy on how to change and develop that pitcher to be what you want him to be. That being said, if you could do that with guys like Matt Moore or Vince Velasquez, I'm sure you would have by now, but you haven't. So it is definitely important that they get more production out of the guys that they're expecting to get production from. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't go out and add other guys that they also think that they could get more production from, if that makes sense.
So actually, just a follow-up question to that, your opinion, always enjoy discussing this, you know, with whoever, and it's been a longstanding issue with the Phillies. When you see guys leave the Phillies, such as Nick Pivetta, Cole Irvin, and have more success elsewhere than they've ever had here, do you start chalking it up to the organization saying the common denominator here is that other teams fix the problems that the Phillies couldn't fix or maybe even caused, like you just mentioned, as opposed to vice versa?
So actually, I'm of a strong opinion that I don't think the Phillies really, with Nick Pivetta especially, I don't think they necessarily messed anything up except for having Chris Young be a pitching coach, period, in the organization. I think that was a real mess because he's not a pitching coach. He's a guy that looks at numbers on a sheet and says, okay, you have to throw, add like 4.7% more vertical spin on your fastball. Figure out a way to do that. Like, that was just a mistake, right? But I don't think Nick Pivetta is good still. I think that he is somebody who, his numbers reflect that. I mean, his numbers are not great this year. I mean, sure, you could look at that and say, hey, well, I would take that as a fourth starter. You could say that, but the Phillies were never going to get that from him because he is very emotional and obviously did not enjoy his time here. And look, they didn't enjoy having it. I'm just going to say it outright. They did not get along. They did not see eye to eye, the organization and him. So, you know, I think that they had to let him go and pursue greener pastures, as it were. But I don't think they screwed anything up there. I think that they just did not mesh well. That happens. And his numbers this year have not been very good. He's still walking a ton of guys. He, as we saw in his start against the Phillies, he is certainly still as emotional as ever. And look, he's still the same guy. As for Cole Irvin, Cole Irvin's peripherals are really bad. He's benefiting from an incredible Oakland defense. I love Cole. Cole is one of my favorite dudes in the game of baseball. He is the man, very sweet guy. But Cole is also benefiting extremely from defense. We all know he's a ground ball first pitcher, you know, pinpoint command. And while he has seen a really, really good, you know, result from being with the Athletics, peripherally, he is due to regress and crash pretty hard, just based on what the numbers look like. That being said, thrilled for him, very excited. He's hardly walking batters, so that's great. Just, you know, benefiting from, you know, the Matt Chapmans, the Matt Olsons, the, I guess the Elvis Andruses of the world. Because they are killing it over there in Oakland. And that's what they always do. That's what they're known for. So they can afford to take on a guy like Cole Irvin because he's a heavy ground ball guy that pinpoints his command, doesn't allow many free passes. So they have a defense that isn't going to allow many balls past the infield when they're hit there.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I guess I gave kind of a pause, I suppose, there. But I guess my overall opinion is that, you know, even though they it might feel that Phillies go on somewhere else and kind of succeed a little bit more, I'm not sure there are so many concrete cases to that as there are, you know, we just feel like that happens because, of course, they're the Phillies. They never get anything right, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I don't actually think that if anything, I'm feeling a little bit more of instilled confidence in this team's ability to develop because we're seeing so many of these guys that we haven't, you know, that we expected so much from, you know, 3-4 years ago that we didn't really hear much from. And now we're seeing them take these massive steps forward, whether that's them coming into their own and, you know, coming of age, or if that's just better development staff. But, you know, when was the last time you saw, how many players is it now, like 6 or 7 guys come up from the minors and, you know, make an impact on their first day, their first week, their first month? I mean, we can name Nick Maton, Luke Williams, Christopher Sanchez, Bailey Falter. Ranger Suarez came back better than ever, than anyone could have expected. like even I won't even go as far as say McMoniak. He didn't really put up a good showing in the majors, but he's been killing AAA. You know, we Matt Virling even. I mean, we have seen so many of these guys come up and make an impact. When was the last time you can say you saw like six or seven Phillies prospects come up and actually do something for once? You know, there's the rare one or two, but they've gotten a lot of production out of those guys. So if anything, I'm feeling a little bit more of instilled confidence in the system's ability to develop. But we'll see. It's all it's a test of time. It truly is.
This episode of Locked On Phillies is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. And this app is free to download. And once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, and athletes and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. Locked On Green Room, again, it's the perfect place to start or join a conversation about Major League Baseball. You'll find fans just like you on Green Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to other big news or rumors. You'll even find Locked On hosts across the NBA, MLB, and NHL platforms, as well as the NFL, with that coming up in just a couple of weeks here. Again, I'll be joining the app soon, so be sure to get started, and I will meet you there. Go download the free Green Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter account, and join the NFL, MLB, NHL, or NBA group for the latest league updates. I know you'll find a ton of incredible rooms of your favorite teams and leagues. I can't wait to join you all in the app. I'll be sure to let you know once the Locked On Phillies room is live. Download the Green Room app today. Green Room, it's changing the way we talk sports.
So let me ask you this, because you alluded to, you know, instilled confidence in the development of the system. I have to get your take then, because there's a variety of opinions on the matter of how they have managed a guy like Spencer Howard this year, who obviously, you know, top pitching prospect in the organization, or at least, you know, technically he was. And we've seen him go three innings. We've seen him get piggybacked. We've seen him pitch in the minor leagues. We've seen them discuss moving him to a permanent bullpen role. In terms of this team, the short term and long term, where should Spencer Howard be utilized right now, in what role? And the other night when he pitches really, really well in three innings, should we be happy about the fact that he went three innings and say, okay, no, he wants to be a major league starter, like we're eventually going to need more from him, this is just a start?
It makes me really upset that the Phillies keep bouncing him around, because I think what a lot of people forget is that Spencer Howard is not a guy that has ever pitched in a full season of professional baseball. Not only that, but he's hardly ever been given the opportunity to play full season ball, period, full stop. I mean, Spencer is a supremely talented arm that, you know, has battled his fair share of injuries along the way. That is for sure. But, you know, started off his college career in the bullpen and made his way into the starting rotation, you know, only pitched, I can't even remember how many innings there, it was so long ago, but only pitched, you know, maybe 30, 40, 50 innings out of, you know, the rotation, was drafted by the Phillies, was a major, you know, he was a huge riser in the draft when he was selected. And the Phillies took a shot on him, and boy, did it pay off. I mean, he became something that they never could have expected, but battled some injuries throughout his minor league career. And then two years ago, ascended from high A to double A and then skipped triple A after pitching in the Arizona Fall League. And then all of a sudden made his way to the majors. I mean, it was just, he has hardly had an opportunity to find a way that works for him, not only to develop a game plan to maintain velocity, but to build up his arm durability. So it really does, it really upsets me. I don't think they're handling him well this year. I think that they are really mistreating him, bouncing him back and forth and giving him different spots to pitch out of. And they should have just, when they said, we're thinking more of 2022 with him, they should have stuck to that. And I understand out of need, because, oh, and this is a whole separate matter, but because your team wouldn't go out and do their due diligence and do what, you know, every American should be doing right now. Anyway, I won't get into that. And you know, get vaccinated. You know, you're down Bailey Falter and you have to make a decision where you call Spencer Howard up when you said you weren't going to touch him until 2022. And that's a problem, because you have to let this guy get his reps in AAA. It's what I was saying before the season even started. I didn't want Spencer Howard to start on the opening day roster. And he didn't for a little bit, and then he did. And it just it should not be that way. He should be given a full season of AAA to stretch his arm out, to really find a way that works for him, to build up his durability, and to find a way to be able to maintain that velocity through at least five, maybe six innings. But they're not letting him do that. And it's really unfair to him. It's really unfair to the fans. And it's really unfair to the organization, because this is a kid that can really alter your rotation outlook over the next few years. And they are just ruining it. They are ruining it all the time. And that's not a development problem. That is an organizational problem. So anyway, that's your spiel on
Spencer Howard. So,
oh my gosh, it's so frustrating.
let me just give you kind of my own take. I agree with you. I would have rather kept him in the minor leagues and say, well, if you're going to play him for 2022, if you still believe this guy is going to be a bona fide starter in your rotation for years to come, then just commit to that. Stop doing this thing where you bring him up sometimes, you can try and give him some major league outings and not, and just kind of throwing off his schedule. But my thing is, if, okay, now you're down Zach Eflin, you're in a playoff push, I get it. Like, I don't agree with it, but I kind of understand where they're coming from, trying to get him on the major league roster, saying we're just going full throttle on winning this year. If he's going to be on the major league roster this year, what are your thoughts? Because this is kind of an idea that I started toying with, I want to say it was about a month ago when they first started doing this piggybacking thing. And then now we're in a situation where, you know, Bailey Falter's on the COVID IL, or, you know, he's spending time in the COVID IL, and Ranger Suarez is moving into the closer's role. And there are instances where you need a long relief guy, sometimes more so. The other day, I think they went to Christopher Sanchez for multiple innings, whatever. It's not that no one can do it, but you're already kind of like down to one because of a role, one because the guy either won't get the COVID vaccination or did not pass a test, whatever the case is. If Spencer Howard's going to be on your roster, and maybe you can get another starter at the trade deadline, wouldn't you just be better served pitching him out of the bullpen at this point if you're really only thinking about this year?
Yes, I completely agree with you. I think that is going forward, especially if you're going to have him on an innings limit anyway, and he's probably not going to get past three without getting tired. You should. That is exactly what you should do. You should, you know, throw him into the bullpen, maybe not as a long relief guy, maybe as a right-handed opposer to Ranger Suarez, where you kind of let both of them be multi-inning stoppers, as it were, firemen. Especially as you start getting, you know, when roster expansion comes along, you especially want a couple of those kinds of guys in your bullpen. So that's definitely something to look forward to. But on top of everything, Bailey Falter should be in the rotation, you know, vaccinated or not. Guy's got to get himself into the rotation, because he's looked fantastic. He has looked absolutely fabulous. And I am a big fan of his. I think that he should absolutely find his way into the rotation. But then you start struggling with, well, then where do I put Chase Anderson? Where do I put Vince Velasquez? Where do I put Matt Moore? Matt Moore is another guy I'd probably be okay with seeing out of a long relief capacity. In fact, he could probably be your quote-unquote mop-up guy, which, if you remember correctly, we were using David Hale for before, which just should never have happened.
Well, Joe Girardi also likes to use him in some high-leverage situations.
In high-leverage scenarios.
And then the team had to get rid of David Hale, so he couldn't use him anymore. So the new high-leverage guy became Neftali Feliz, and that didn't go so well either.
Oh, Dan, please. I am...
Do you mean to tell me that Neftali Feliz against... what was it? Jesse Winker and Nick Castellanos in his first time pitching in 4 years was not a good idea.
Look, I thought that Neftali Feliz, the idea in and of itself, not a bad idea to put him in your bullpen, to have his performance in the majors since 2017 be in a game on the line scenario against two of the best
all-star
in the
starters.
National League. Yeah, guys hitting, you know, 340 plus. Not the best idea. Definitely not. But, you know, as I'm sure if you follow me on Twitter, you're already aware, I've disagreed with a lot of things that Joe Girardi has done this year.
We're getting to it. Don't worry. I'm going to probe it more.
Unfortunate. But anyway, yeah, I think that there are many guys that are better suited for long relief than David Hale once was. And I think that, you know, whether you decide that Chase Anderson should be DFA'd, released, shipped off to another team to help you suppress your luxury tax number, what have you, and same with Vince Velasquez and all these other guys, that can only, you know, make your bullpen better. And so you don't need too many long relief guys, but having Spencer out of there would be an absolute thrill, especially as we go down the line. Again, they should not be looking at a guy like Spencer and saying, hey, this guy is a starter going forward. They should not be looking at a guy like Matt Moore and say, hey, this guy is a starter going forward. They should not be looking at Vince Velasquez, say, hey, starter going forward, because those guys can hardly get you three clean innings. So if you could put them in the bullpen, you know, not so much Vince Velasquez, but Matt Moore has been better of late, has been better, I guess, at least over the first three innings or so, four innings maybe.
They win a lot of the starts, not always because of him.
Yeah, that's for sure. But, you know, I think that especially Matt Moore and Spencer Howard, you could throw those guys into your bullpen and say, hey, these are our long relief dudes. Same with Ranger Suarez, but he's a little bit more high leverage. And then you put Bailey Falter in the rotation and all of a sudden you're like, ah, this is better. This takes a little bit because it, you know, let's say Aaron Nola gets blown up one day. You just say, okay, Matt, your turn, go. Okay, you know, Spencer, you can pitch the last three innings of this game. That's great. That works for me. Like you get a solid, you know, probably seven innings out of the combination of those two. So I'll take it.
That's going to do it for part one of my conversation with Alex Carr. Stay tuned for part two. Betting on baseball doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get your podcasts.